We're holding on to Sadiq Amadbey's seven lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday a couple of braises that Daoshend, this that we've been talking about, the concept of ba'ol of imo, that if you borrow or rent, or we said it applies to any of the shomrim, and ba'ol of imo, meanwhile, you have the owner of the object itself is previously or at the same time hired out or lent out to you to work, then you're potter from various things that happen to the animal. In the case of a shoyo, you'd be potter for all the yovam of shoyo up to including gneva, aveda, and oines. In the case of a shomer sachar or soicher gneva and aveda, and we ended up saying we had a machlokas about pshia, and the halacha was we said that for that even that he'd even be potter from pshia, which means that a shomer chinam who's only chayev for pshia would be potter in this case because ba'al of him. We had the whole discussion about what Rav Hamnuna had said that you need in order for Ba'al of Imo to work, the owner has to be there at the time of the borrowing and at the time of the accident, and that the owner has to be working with the animal. And we schlugged up Rav Hamnuna and we said not so. It's enough that it's enough that the owner is there at the time of She'eva. So we brought a couple of braises in that connection that Darshan in the Psukim, since the Pasuk repeats and says, But all of ein imo shalom yishalom. If the owner is not there, then he has to pay. In ba'ol of imo lo yishalom. And if the owner is there, is with him, then he. If the owner is with him, then he doesn't have to pay. So two braises have pointed out that the pasuk seems to be repetitious, and from that we learn that you only need one of them. You only need the owner to be there b'shas she'ela and not b'shas shvuro meisa. Only yes, the owner has to be with him and employed by him by the shomer. When he first borrowed or rented the animal, or first took it in as a shomer, but not he doesn't have to be there. He doesn't have to be there when the accident happens. So now, so we had brought braises in that connection, but the braises hadn't really made clear how exactly we learn that. How exactly we learn the braises had just said because you have two psukim, then therefore we learn that the owner only needs to be there for one of them. So now the Gemara
Do we
explains our bias. What?
use the repetition for something else?
No, we're using the repetition to learn this concept, but how exactly we learn it is going to be the subject of the Gemara now. So our bias, now we learned previously also, we learned at the beginning of the Perek that you have a machlokas Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan in various places in Shas, whether when the Torah mentions two things tied together with a vav, does it mean and or does it mean or? So we said that according to Rabbi Yoshia, we said according to Rabbi Yoshia, when it says a vav, it would mean and unless we have some other indication from the pasuk that it means or. We gave the example of a person cursing his father where according to Rabbi Yoshia, it would have meant that he's chayiv misa only if he curses both of them, except that the pasuk gives us extra phrasing to tell us that he's chayiv for each one individually. Then Rabbi Yonason had said that no, the vav itself can mean or, and on the contrary, it's not going to mean and unless the pasuk specifies by saying a word like yachdav. So now the Gemara is going to relate that to what we dealt with over here in our braises. Abaya holds like Rabbi Yoshia in that earlier sugya, or Matarets the Kroi could Rabbi Yoshia, and therefore he's going to understand the psukim. Therefore he's going to understand the psukim and the drosha from the psukim like Rabbi Yoshia. Where again, Rabbi Yoshia is saying that you don't need it to say yachdav or anything like that. Just the fact that it says above means and, unless we have an indication that it means or. Rava holds like Rabbi Yonason, who says that on the contrary, the vav means or, and only if it says yachdav does it mean and. Or mataratz the kroy could Rabbi Yonason, and he's going to explain the psukim in light of the opinion of Rabbi Yonason. Abayas savolak Rabbi Yoshia or mataratz the kroy could Rabbi Yoshia. It's going to go like this: the pasuk says ba'ol of ein imo shalom yishalom. The owner is not together with him, then he has to pay. The first pasuk. Time of delesim tavayu. Now, if we only had that pasuk, it would mean that he has to be there by both of them, both by the borrowing and by the accident, in order for the shoyl to be potter. Ha ise b'chodav alese, implying that if he was there for one of them and wasn't there for the other, then he'd be potter, because again, according to Rabbi Yoshia, the default is to assume that when we have two things, that it means That it means both of them. But v'haksiv, but then the next pasuk continues in ba'olav imo lo yishalem. If the owner is with him, then he doesn't have to pay. Where on the contrary, if we only had that pasuk, it would mean time de isev tavayu. When would he be potter? Only if the owner is present by both of them. Ha'i isev b'chader v'lasev b'chader, implying that if he was there for one and not there for the other, mechayev, then he would be chayev. So how do you reconcile the psukim? Where, if we look at it from Rabbi Yoshia's point of view, the first pasuk seems to be implying, since the pasuk says, v'chiyishal ish me'im re'ehu, a person borrows something from somebody else, v'nishbar oimeis, and it's broken or dies. So according to Rabbi Yoshia, that vav means and then when it says ba'olavein ima shalom ishalom, the vav by v'nishbar oimeis would imply that it means that when do we say ba'olav einim shalom shalom, only if the owner wasn't present by either one of those things, neither by the v'chi shalish nor by the v'nishbar emes. But then on the other hand, the next pasuk continues in ba'olav imay lo yishalem, implying as long as the owner is there for something, then he's potter. So therefore, how do we reconcile loy malach? So it tells you that indeed he only needs to be there by one of them, but the one is the she'ela, as the Gemara is going to explain soon on Sadik Vav Amar Aleph, how we know that the one that he has to be by is the she'ela. Loy malach, it tells you, how you ima b'shas she'ela, if the owner was together with him at the time of the borrowing, and it's sarach lias ima b'shas shvoto omesa, he doesn't have to be there when the animal is broken or when it dies. The she'el is potter regardless, because he was imoy, because ba'ol of imoy at the time of the borrowing. But hoya ima b'shas shvoto omesa, but if the owner was there at the time of shvoto omesa, it's not good enough. Sarach lias ima b'shas she'ela, he would have to be there at the time of she'ela as well. So in other words, looking at the psukim the way Rabbi Yoshia does, we're saying that evidently the psukim are implying the owner does need to be there for only one of them. However, there is a particular one that he needs to be there. We're not going to say it's either one or the other. We're going to say there's one that he has to be there for, and one where it doesn't matter whether he's there or not. How we know that one is she'ela, the Gemara will deal with soon. But that would be how Rabbi Yoshia would explain the psukim, and so Abaye explains the psukim and the brises that quoted those psukim in that vein. Rava savala k'Rabbi Yonason and retires the kroy k'Rabbi Yonason. On the other hand, Rava holds like Rabbi Yonason, and Rabbi Yonason had said that on the contrary, when you have a vav in the pasuk, it does mean or, and only when the pasuk specifies two things together and says the word yachdav or something like that. It means both of them. So Rava holds like that, and retires the kroik of Yonason, and he understands the psukim the way Rabbi Yonason does. D'tanya, so we learn in a brisa. Now Rashi takes out the word d'tanya, because we're not really analyzing the brisas over here. It is true that we brought the brisas over here to shlug up Rav Hamnuna, but we're not really discussing the brisas so much over here, Rashi points out. We're discussing the psukim. How do the psukim themselves imply the din that we're dealing with over here, that the owner only has to be there b'shas she'ela and not b'shas shvoro mesa? So Rashi explains there were people, evidently, the reason why. Now Rava is going to quote the psukim out of order. So he's going to quote the second pasuk in Ba'olavim Elo Yishalom first, because that's going to be the way he's going to work out his drasha. But we're discussing how we know that Abaye and Rava hold like Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonason respectively, as far as the concept of whether we say that two things means or and. So they're both learning the psukim, how we know this concept of, yeah. So Rashi explains, evidently there were people who thought that of the two brises that we quoted yesterday, the Shlogah of Hamnuna, one was like Rabbi Yoshia and one was like Rabbi Yonason. But Rashi says that no, we're not talking about that the two different brises are like two different opinions. We're saying the psukim themselves can be understood according to Rabbi Yoshia's opinion or according to Rabbi Yonason's opinion. According to Rabbi Yoshia's opinion, that when you have a vav, it means and. Unless you have a pasuk that implies that means or, and Rabbi Yonason, who says the other way around, that it implies or, unless there's a pasuk that says and. So Rava is going to understand as follows. So again, Tanya Rashi takes out the word Tanya. Hagoyes Habach also takes it out for the same reason. Im ba'olav imo lo yishalom. The second pasuk says if the owner is not with him, then he doesn't have to pay. Mashma de'iseh b'tavayu. That pasuk alone would imply, it could imply that the owner was there for both parts of the thing, both the she'ela and the accident. Umashma nami de'iseh b'chodav alaseh b'chodav potter. It could also equally well imply that if he's there for only one of them and not the other, then he would be potter. Because again, according to Rabbi Yonasan, when the pasuk ties together two things with a vav, it already can mean or. And when the previous pasuk says v'chi yishal ishme imre'u vid nishbar oimes, the vav could mean or. So in other words, that we would say that the olav im ba'olav imay lo yishalem, the second pasuk is saying if the owner, that if the owner was there when v'chi yishal ish, or if he was there by the nishbar oimes, either way lo yishal. But the previous pasuk had said, that if the owner is not there, then he has to pay. Mashma de lesser b'tavayu. That could be mashma, again, according to the Yonason, that he wasn't there for either one, or mashma nami, but it can equally well be mashma, that if he's there for one and not for the other, then he's chayev. So again, how do you reconcile loy malach? So it tells you, that indeed he only needs to be there for one, but there's a key one that he has to be there for. If the owner was there at the time of She'ela, then he doesn't additionally have to be there at the time of Shavuot or Mesa. It's enough that he was there at the beginning by the She'ela. But if he was there at the time of Shavuot or Mesa, that's not good enough, then he needs to be there at the time of She'ela. So Rava is also, so Rashi points out that in Rava's, in the fact that Rava quotes the second pasuk first, there's no real, Rashi points out, there's no real nafkamina of it. It's just that's how he happened to do it. Rashi says, lav davka. He could have equally well quoted the first pasuk first and the second pasuk second, but he quoted them out of order. That's what Rashi says, that thing that Rava quotes the psukim out of order is what misled some people to think that the Gemara is dealing over here with reconciling the braises and saying that one braisa goes like Rabbi Yoshi and the other Rabbi Yonasan. But no, it's not so. Actually, both braises, Abaya is understanding both braises and in turn both psukim like Rabbi Yoshi, and Rava is explaining both of them like Rabbi Yonasan. Okay, but the Gemara asks, fine, according to Abaya and Rava, according to either of their way of explaining it, then it comes out we're saying that the psukim are implying that the owner needs to be there for only one of the two things, the she'ela versus the accident, but that the one that he, that ultimately the one that he has to be there for is the she'ela. Well, the question is, Epo Hana, maybe say the other way around, maybe say the one he has to be there for is the accident. Oh, after all we did is we derived from the psukim that the owner needs to be there for only one of the two things. How do we know? We said that means that he has to be there for she'ela, but how do we know it means that rather than that he has to be there for the shavuot or mesa? And the answer is mistaba she'ela adifa. It's more logical that the borrowing is the more important thing, mishum de kamaisi lo l'rishusei, because the time of the borrowing is when he's bringing it into his rishus. And becomes chayev for the various things with it. So the Gemara asks, "Adar abe shavuro umesa adifa sheken chayev ba'inseha." On the other hand, you could argue the shavuro umesa is the more important time because that's when he becomes chayev in the insin. So maybe therefore we should say that that's the key factor. And the answer is no. Ilo she'ela shvuro mesa my oven. If he hadn't borrowed it in the first place, the shvuro mesa wouldn't make a difference. The whole reason why shvuro mesa becomes important is because to begin with he had borrowed it. Therefore, we should say that the borrowing is considered the more important factor. Well, the Gemara asks right back, "Vilav shvuro mesa she'ela mi ovid, so my ovid." So you could say the other way around: if the animal hadn't gotten broken or died, then the fact that he did she'ela on it wouldn't matter. He would return the thing, and that's that. There are two interdependent things that are going to make him chayev: one that he borrowed it, and one that there was shvuro mesa. So why are we keying off when he borrowed it? If we have to say, fine, according to Abaya and Rava, both we're learning from the psukim that he's chayev in only one of the two things, but still, how do we know specifically it's the time when he borrowed? And the answer is afilo hochi she'ela adifa. Nevertheless, when you have to break that, when you have to break that tie over there, the she'ela is the more important time. Sheken chayev b'mizonisel, because at that point he becomes chayev to feed the animal by borrowing it, and not just feeding. He becomes chayev in various other things that he's responsible for the animal as well. So therefore, ultimately, we're going to say that's the more important time, and therefore, that would be what triggers. So therefore, we would say that's when he becomes chayev, and that would be the time, therefore, when we say that if the bialim were there, that he would be potter, because the fact that now he needs to start feeding the animal. We're not necessarily talking about just the fact that he needs to feed the animal per se. It means not just the feeding, but in other words, all his obligations, including the obligation that eventually, if there's an onus, he's going to need to pay. So in fact, there are different explanations what's the rationale behind this concept of Ba'ol Avimai. In fact, the Chavis Yor and Uli Achron says he has a tshuva on the subject of Ba'ol Avimai, and at the end of it, he says, "B'chlal, I wonder what's the logic behind it. It doesn't seem logical that because you hired or borrowed the services of the owner together with the animal, therefore you should be potter from Odinsen and potter even from Pshia, as we said, with everything in it. What's the logic?" So he leaves the question open. So there are different explanations, and one explanation, in fact, is from the Sefer Achinuch HaRishon, who says the logic is that, similar to what the Gemara is saying over here. Now, what it is like this. The Sefer Achinuch says the Torah didn't want to start doing that. We have to figure out how long was the owner there, and we're going to start to nasata dvarecha l'shiurin. We're going to have that if he was there X amount of time versus he was there 5 minutes less or something like that. We're going to make it depend on that. We want to make a uniform rule, and we're going to go according to the beginning, because the beginning of something is the more important part of it. So al derech, like what the Gemara says over here, the beginning is when he first becomes chayev to feed it, and so forth. So what it is like this again. So Abaya and Rava have both understood the psukim respectively, according to the Yoshia and according to the Yonason, to come out with the same result that the psukim are implying, that he only needs to be there for one thing. How do we know which is that one thing? Ultimately, we use the svara sheken chayev b'mizonisel, the fact that when he borrowed it is the moment when he becomes chayev and it's mizonis, and chayev for various other things that he has to do for the animal, including all the way up to and including the point that if the animal later on suffers an onus, then he as a shoyl is going to be chayev. So therefore, we can say that's when, if ba'ol of imoy, then that counteracts that. Interesting svara, by the way, that Al-Bag on the Pasuk brings another interesting svara behind this concept of Ba'ol Avimai. He says it's not, you can't really have that the owner and the borrower should both be meshubad to each other at the same time. So if you're going to have the borrower is going to be meshubad to him, that I borrowed your animal, therefore I'm responsible for whatever happened to it, you can't have it. That wouldn't work if that's contradicted by the fact at the same time, meanwhile, you're meshubad to me to do my work. So that would be a reason, and then that Al-Bag says another point as well, since in the case where the owner is getting paid for his work, he would rather, you know what, I want to get paid for this work, so I don't mind so much, fine, if you're at the same time, you're going to be borrowing or renting my animal, at least you're going to be paying me for my work, and you're going to be paying me for my animal, even if you're not paying me for my animal, I'm doing you a favor, and in the end, eventually, you'll do me a favor, a reciprocal favor, so therefore, since he himself is working for him, then he doesn't mind it as much that the other guy doesn't take on this degree of responsibility. Anyway, so there are a few different possibilities that Meforshim and Rishonim and Achronim bring on the reasons behind this mitzvah, but one of them, the Sefer Achinuch, says, based on our Gemara, that you go according to the beginning things. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi says there's a different way we can learn from the Pesukim. We don't even really need to learn from the contrast of the Pesukim, im ba'ol of im shalom ishalom, im ba'ol of im lo ishalom. Rather, Rav Ashi says, Omakra, v'chi yishal ishme imrehu. Right at the beginning, when the Pesuk describes the case of the Shoyl, it says a person borrows from Re'ehu, implying he borrows it from with Re'ehu. In other words, implying that the animal was with Re'ehu, and now he borrowed it, and now he took it away from Re'ehu, and he's going to be using it, implying v'loy Re'ehu imo, implying that Re'ehu did not come along with the animal, which would be, in other words, they borrowed the owner as well. And then, shalom is shalom, then the Pasuk says he has to pay. So right away there you can see that if re'ehu imo, then the implication of the pasuk is that he's potter. So that's so, and since v'chiyishal ishma im re'ehu is obviously talking about the she'ela, so therefore so that alone tells us that the onu has to be there b'shas she'ela in order for ba'al of imo to work. Well, the Gemara asks, then why does the Torah have to continue with the Pesukim Ba'ol of Ein Imo Shalom Yishalom and Im Ba'ol of Imo Lo Yishalom? If according to Rav Ashi, you can learn that just from the words Me'im Re'ehu. And the answer is, Ilav Hanach. Yeah, but if you didn't have those other Pesukim, Hav Amina, Hai Uche Dekrahu, then you would think the Me'im Re'ehu is just the style of the Pesuk. We're not meant to learn anything special from Me'im Re'ehu. It's just the style of the Pesuk rather than just saying B'chi Yishalish. Now that we have the word, now that we have the Ba'ol of Ein Imay and Ba'ol of Imay, then that tells us, going back on the words Ba'ol of Imay, that tells us that there's a case that it goes back on the words V'chiyishal Ishmi Imreyehu, and it tells us that now that we know there's a concept of She'ela Baba, now that we know that there's a concept of Ba'ol of Imay from the continuation of the Pasuk and the beginning of the next Pasuk, then that tells us what would be the case. When does She'ela Baba'ilim kick in? When V'chiyishal Ishmi Imreyehu, and Re'ehu does not come along with it. So in other words, Rav Ashi is saying you do need the other psukim to tell us in the first place that there's a concept of Ba'ol of Imay. But how do we know that it applies specifically to Shas Shela, where according to Abaye and Rava so far, we have to say it's based on the logic that we go according to the beginning of things. We go according to when he became Chayab to feed it and to do various other things for it. Rav Ashi says you actually have the Pasuk itself implies that by the words V'chi Yishal Ishme Imre. Okay. So that's that. So we've established that point. That there is a concept of she'ela b'bailim, and that, as the Mishnah had told us, that it applies only if the owner was with him at the time of the she'ela. Doesn't matter where the owner is. B'shas shivoto omisa. We had schlugged up Rav Hamnuna, and we had said that as long as he borrowed or rented him at or before the time of the of borrowing or renting or otherwise becoming a shomer on the object, then he's potter for whatever happens to it, all the way up to and including pshia. Okay. So now the Gemara has some questions on this and in this connection. Boy Rami Bachoma, Shaala l'riv amahu. What would happen if a person borrows a cow in order to use it for revia, in order to commit bestiality, which of course is also, but nevertheless, you know, sometimes people do things that are also as well. Now Rashi explains that the question is, does he become a shoyl, or maybe does he become a shomer socher on it? So the question would be then, so that's Rashi learns that way. The Meiri explains that the question would be as far as Ba'al of Imay. Would we say that if the owner came along with it, then that would be an example of then we would have the patur of Ba'al of Imay. So according to the Meiri, all the questions we're going to have over here are going to be continuing on this topic of Ba'al of Imay. According to Rashi and the Ritva agrees, the first few of them are going to be actually as far as the basic question whether he's even a shoyol or a shomer socher. The Rambam also where he puts it in the dinim and then the way he phrases it seems also to understand that this question is as far as Ba'al of Imay. So the question is, Kiddushayli Inshi Be'inen, do we need that the borrowing should be the kind of thing that people normally borrow it for? Or Lahochi Lashayli Inshi, people don't normally borrow an animal for such a purpose. Or maybe you would say that the reason why he becomes Chayev as a Shoyal for everything is because of Hana, and because of the Hana that he has from being able to use it. And here he is having Hana. A hana that's also, but a hana nonetheless. So maybe therefore that would be enough to make him a shoyal. Or again, according to the Rambam and according to the Meiri, maybe the question would be that nevertheless, would we still say that Ba'ol of Imay applies? Or would we say basically that since this isn't really a she'ela, so maybe Ba'ol of Imay wouldn't apply because Ba'ol of Imay is a chidush and maybe it doesn't apply in such a case. Okay, what about another question Rami Bachoma asked? What about if he borrowed the animal not to use it, but just to show off as a rich person? So Rashi explains, in other words, he wants, for example, to be able to buy on credit or other things like that. So he so nowadays they're going to look at his credit rating. Back then they would want to know how much actual assets he has. So therefore he might want to borrow a cow so that people will look and say, "Oh, look at this guy. He's rich, he's got assets. Therefore we can trust him to lend him money and know that eventually he's going to pay us back or to sell him on credit, etc." So he's borrowing the cow not to use it but just in order to show off like that. Now, we learned, by the way, earlier in the Masechta, we had a case where a person borrows something with the intention that he might sell it on the way or that he might return it. We had an example of a chosen over there back in the Uri pays.
And I was with
you. In the sixth parak, yeah. So we had an example there where a chosen gets something on consignment where he says, "I'm going to bring it to my father-in-law's house, and if they accept it from me as presents for my kala, good, and if not, then I'm going to return it." And we had a case over there, we said over there in the end, the chosen himself was a merchant, and he might want to sell it on the way if his kala is not interested in it, or he was going to sell it at a profit to his chosen, to his father-in-law, whatever. The point is that we have such cases. So then there's no question, we discussed over there, that he would be considered a shoyl, because the fact is, he is getting that. Then the fact is, we said that he was getting them in order to sell them. We talked about over there. In some cases, he might be considered a shoyl. In some cases, he might even be considered a lekeach. But here, we're talking about the chidushim amiyuchasim lo ritva points out that this is not similar to that case over there, because there he is actually having a hana. Here, the question is, he's not really having a direct hana from the animal because he's only using it as a basis to establish his credit rating. So mamoina be'inan, do we require that he has a hana of mamon in it?
He's just doing it for credit, but he's doing it to show off, then he would have a direct.
Well, we're doing it to show off, but in order to establish his credit. So the question is, mamoina be'inan ve'ika, do we require, in order for him to be considered a shoyl or for she'elah b'baylim to apply, do we say there has to be mamon involved? And there is, because after all, the animal is worth mamon. Oduma mamona de islay hana mi neighbor in, or maybe he needs hana. Maybe he needs mamon that he's actually getting hana from it. Veleka, and he doesn't really have a hana from it because he's not using the animal. He's not using the animal itself. So that would be another question. Similarly, shola lasis ba pochas mi pruta mahu. Rami Bachama has another question. What if he borrowed the animal to do less than a pruta's worth of work? So again, do we say we require that in order for him to be considered a shoyl and for she'elah b'baylim to kick in, we would say there has to be mamon ve'ika, and there is, because the cow is definitely worth more than pruta. Or maybe we would say that when he uses it for less than a pruta of work, it's not considered malacha, it's not considered hana, and therefore he can't be considered a shoyl, and therefore he can't be considered a shoyl, or you can't say that she'elah b'baylim would apply.
Was Rami Bar Chama in Daf Kof of the last Masech that he asked his father-in-law to adjust his hat because he had a chiddush that his father-in-law didn't hear? What was his father-in-law?
His father-in-law was Rav Chisda. Rami Bar Chama married the daughter of Rav Chisda, and then he passed away or divorced her, and then Rava married her.
No, he passed away, didn't divorce her.
And then Yeshem,
maybe he divorced her.
It depends. Yeshem in one way, Yeshem in some, Yeshem in the other. There's a question whether Rava was a Kohen. If Rava was a Kohen and he married her, obviously Rami Bar Chama can't have divorced her.
That's right.
Anyway. Fine. Onward. Here's another question. And everybody agrees. Now, before we said that Rashi and the Ritva say that the first few questions we had so far were on whether he's considered a shoyl or not, or Shema Sachar. Now we said the Rambam and the Meiri hold that the questions so far were on She'elah B'baylim. The rest of the questions are definitely on She'elah B'baylim. Everybody agrees that in the following cases, he's going to be a shoyl, that the Gemara is going to start asking now the question would be whether She'elah B'baylim applies. So Shal Shtei Paris Lasis Ben Pruta Mahu. What would happen if he borrowed two cows where he's going to be doing a pruta's worth of work with the two cows together? Then do we consider it she'elah b'baylim if the owner came along? Mi amin and zilbas a she'elah mashal. Do we say we go according to, we look at the financial relationship between the she'elah and the mashal, the ikka, and you have a pruta, and therefore she'elah b'baylim would apply. Aduma zilbas a paris. Or maybe you would go according to the cows, like a mamona, and each one is not mamon because each one you're only doing a half a pruta's worth. Actually, this one also, you have the same machlokas. We're showing him whether the question is on she'elah b'baylim or whether it's she'elah. The next one, that it's the next one where it begins, definitely something else. Not something else, according to the Rambam and according to the Meiri, all this time, it's all the same thing. According to Rashi and according to the Ritva, from now on, we're starting on a series of questions about Ba'olavim. So the next question is, Shal Mishutkin, if a person borrowed a cow that belongs to two partners, V'nishal Echad Mehen, and along with it, one of the partners comes and it says, I'm lending myself out to you to do work. So now, would that be considered she'ela b'bailim? The question is, kula b'bailim be'inin v'haldeka, do we require that the entire ownership is ba'olavim, right? And you don't have that because you only have one of the two. Or you don't about ma'ahu pauga, d'day mi'a mifter, or maybe we'd say that he would be potter from the part that belongs to that partner. So he'd be potter from half, but he'd be potter from half, but maybe he'd be chayev on the other half. Tosfos asks the question that, we learned in Bava Kamma, we have an example where a person, where two partners stole an animal and one of them shechted it or one of them sold it, where we said that partner has to pay. Or we had a case where they stole from two partners and he admitted to one of them and denied to the other one. Anyway, we say there's a case where he has to pay five chatzoi boker. We say that you have to pay tashlum abav chamisha, but we said there's a case where you pay tashlum abav chamisha for half the animal. So why wouldn't we say over here that it's an obvious thing that we would say that we would apply she'elam abaylam, we would apply ba'ol of imo to half the animal. And so Tosva says, because the svara is over there, okay, he's going to pay according to what he stole. But here, the fact is, the whole concept of she'elam abaylam is something of a chidush. So we're really only going to say when you have reason to apply the chidush, then yes. But the question is here, does the reason for the chidush apply, given that you don't have the entire ba'ol of imo?
This is still
Rami Bachame. Another question, Shutfin Shashalu Vinisha La'echad Mehen. The other way around, if two partners borrowed an animal to use it, and they're planning to use the animal to plow a field that belongs to both of them together. So the Ritva points out, if they each borrowed it to do individual work with it, then there's going to be no question. Each one of them when he does the work, then we have to look at Ba'ol Avimo. But here we're talking about where they borrowed it, and they're going to be doing work on a common field that belongs to both of them. So they borrowed it, v'nisha la'echad mehen, and now the owner of the animal was lent out to one of them for something, for some kind of work, whether the same work or different work. Mahu, and again, the question is, kula shoyl be'inin v'leka, do we require that the owner is hired out or lent out to the entire shoyl, v'leka, and you don't, because he's only doing work for one of them, or domaba, he pauga d'shayli, mi'as mifter, or maybe he would be potter in the half that belongs to the one for whom he's working for. And another question, Rami Bachama asks, Shome Isha, if a person borrowed an animal of Nichsim Belug from a wife, the Nishal Baila, and her husband comes and joins to help with the work or to do some other work or something like that. Vinishal Baila Ima, Agoy Sabach adds the word. Or the other way around, Isha Shashala, if a married woman borrowed the cow or whatever, Vinishal Abal, and the owner of the cow also came to do work for the husband. Mahu, what would be the din in those cases? So the question is, Kinyan Peris, Kinyan Aguf Domi Eloi, do we say the husband has Kinyan Peris, the Nichsim Alug, the goof of them belongs to the wife? The payers of them belong to the husband. So the question is the husband over here considered enough of an owner that we would say that we apply the rule of Ba'ol of Imai or not? Tosfos wonders anyway, when we say Shalmina Isha, how does she have the ability to lend out the Nichsim Alug anyhow? The husband is supposed to be entitled to the payers. So the husband can rent it out or lend it out without her reshus because you're going to be getting the payers from it and the husband has the right to the payers. So what do you mean Shalmina Isha? So Tosfos says, first of all, maybe indeed he can't do it without her reshus, because the whole point of Nichsim Alug is mishum, as we learned many times in Seder Noshim, mishum ravcha de besa. You want to have it. There should be more income for the household. So therefore, so he can't unilaterally decide to go and lend it out without her permission. Or Tosfos says fine. When it says Shalmina Isha, doesn't mean actually borrowing from her. It means borrowing from him. Means borrowing from him where the Nichsim Alug belonged to her. So So in any case, then that would be the question. That would be the question again. Is the husband considered enough of an owner? To say that ba'ol of imo would apply in either direction? Again, whether you borrowed from him and whether you borrowed from him and he also goes along with it, or where she borrowed and the owner of the animal is going and working for the husband. So those are all Rami Bachama's questions. And the Gemara brings Amale Ravina L'Ravashi. Here's another question Ravina asks Ravashi. If a person says to his shliach, go and be borrowed together with my cow. So in other words, he's saying, So Reuven owns a cow. Shimon asks to borrow it. So Reuven says to Levi, you go along as my shliach and do work for Shimon together with the cow or doing something else, because we said before it can be some other kind of work. The question would be, but all of mamash be'ina, do we require that it's the owner of the animal himself who goes, v'leka, and here you don't, because the shliach, or do a shluch or kamosa, or maybe we would say that the shliach is considered like himself, v'ika, and therefore you have she'el b'bayim. So on all of Rami Bachama's earlier questions, the Gemara didn't give an answer. And so the halacha is in general with them that he's potter because since we have a suffix, then you can't make him pay because in all those cases, we can ask whether it's she'el b'bayim. Anyway, so now as far as this one, omelet of Acha, breder of Ibya, lot of Ashi. So Rav Acha Breidir of Ivya points out to Rav Ashi that as far as the last two questions, we can find a proof. We can say, Baal, as far as the question of the husband, in the case with the Nichsim Lug, Plugtid Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish, you can point out it's actually a machlokas Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish. And since we know the halacha is generally Rav Yochanan, then that would be our answer. We would follow what Rav Yochanan says, and therefore we would apply that over here also. Similarly, shliach plugged to Rabbi Yonis and Rabbi Yoshia, and as far as a shliach, that would depend on a machlokas of Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonis in connection with Hatoras with Haforas Nedarim. Where again, once we establish who the halacha is like in that machlokas, then we'll know what the answer is over here. So plugged to shliach plugged to Rabbi Yonis and Rabbi so Baal plugged to Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. De Itmar, we have a discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish as far as bikurim. Now, you have like this. When a person brings Bikurim, normally, together with when he brings the Bikurim, he says some Pesukim. He says, Yigadti Ayyam Hashem Alekecha. He says, Arami Ovidavi, and all the Pesukim that it says, and all the Pesukim that it says over there. So now you have one rule in that regard is if he doesn't own the land, he doesn't do that because he can't say, Ha'oretz Hashem Asapta Li Hashem, because he doesn't actually own the land. Now, what if he owns the land for Kenyan Paris? So, if a person sells a field to somebody else insofar as Paris, so the other one's going to be entitled to the Paris, but he doesn't own the goof of the karka. That means, for example, when he owns the land as far as Paris, it means, for example, he's allowed to go in there for the purpose of picking the Paris, for example. But let's say he has no rights over the karka itself. Let's say he can't go start digging in the karka itself without permission of the owner. So, Rabbi Yochanan Amar maybe the Kodesh. Rabbi Yochanan says he can bring the Kodesh.
Well, you mean digging for the sake of something?
Digging for the sake of something other than right? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar maybe the Kodesh. Rabbi Yochanan says he can bring the Kodesh and he can say the Pesukim. But Rish Lakish Amar Omer maybe the any Kodesh and Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish says that he brings the Bikurim, but he doesn't say the Pesukim. Rabbi Yochanan maybe the Kodesh because he holds Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf Rabbi, because owning the Peres is tantamount to owning the Guf for this purpose, and therefore he can validly say the Pesukim Hashem Asaka Li Hashem. Rish Lakish Omer maybe the any Kodesh Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Aguf Rabbi, and Rish Lakish holds that that's not considered a Kinyan on the Guf of it. Well, since the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, that kinyan peres, kinyan aguf, then therefore the result is that in the question with the husband and wife, as far as the nichsim alug, the answer would be that yes, the husband is considered the owner of the cow insofar as it's peres, because that's how nichsim alug work, and therefore that yes, if he were to now hire himself out to the borrower, or if the owner of the animal were to hire himself out to him, then yes, you would have she'el b'bayim. Okay, shliach. machlokta de Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshia, as far as whether you can send a shliach and have Bailev Imai work that way, there you have a machlokta that's Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshia. The Tanya, ha'omel apotropos, if a person says to an apotropos, a trustee who's managing his properties, Rashi described that you have, let's say, the person, the husband is going away to Medina Sayam, so he appoints an apotropos to manage the household affairs in his absence, to provide support for his wife and children, and he says to this apotropos, kol nedorim shtei ishti nederes mikan ad she'ovim makom pliny hofer lo, any nedorim that my wife makes before I get back from such and such a place, I want you to be mefer for her, the hefer lo, and the apotropos does that and says about any neder of hers mufer lo, yochol yu mufarin, you would think that that works and the nedorim are canceled. Talmud Lema, no, therefore the pasuk says, isha yukimenu v'isha yifedenu, the pasuk says, her husband has to be, can uphold the neder, or her husband can cancel it. Only the husband, Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yonasan Amim, Matzinim Bechol Makom, Sheshlocha Shalom K'moisei. Rabbi Yonasan says that no, we always find Shlocha Shalom K'moisei, and therefore the apotropos can stand in place of the husband for that. So therefore, so it comes out that according to Rabbi Yonasan, we would say that a shliach would work for Ba'al of Imai, and according to Rabbi Yoshia, not. So why indeed would we not say so Taka, why don't we say that Shlucha Shon Kamosa like in the whole Torah? So first Tosva says in the case of Nedorim, it's because in the case of Nedorim it says Isha twice, Isha Yukimenu, the Isha Yifirenu. So therefore that means the Torah is insisting, according to Rabbi Yoshia, it has to be only the husband, nobody else. Similarly over here, it says Ba'olav twice, in Ba'olav Ima, Ba'olav in Ima Shalom Shalom, in Ba'olav Ima Lo Yishalom. Therefore, based on Rabbi Yoshia, we would say the same thing, it has to be the husband himself. Also, Tosva says, because the word Ba'olav and the word Isha itself, specifically, even if it wasn't repeated, the word Ba'olav itself implies Davka, the owner. The word Isha implies Davka, her husband. So therefore, Rabbi Yoshia says, no Shluchim. So here we wouldn't say Shlucha Shalom Kamosa according to Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yonasan doesn't care for those Darashas, therefore he says Shlucha Shalom Kamosa. So since the Halacha, as far as Nedarim, is like Rabbi Yoshia, that a shliach cannot be made for the wife's nedarim, only the husband's, then the result is over here, a shliach is not considered ba'al avim. Well, now comes the question. Omelet of Elish L'Rava, ha'omel abdet sevi sholim parasimah. What about if the owner of the cow were to say to his eved, go and lend yourself out to the other guy together with my cow? Mahu, what would be the din? We just said that it will depend on a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yoshia, and Rabbi Yonasan, whether shlucha shon kamosei, but with an eved, it might be different. And the question might still be, with an eved, it would work, or vice versa. Even if we say shlucha shon kamosei, there might be a reason by an eved it wouldn't. Tiboy lamando ama shlucha shon kamosei, hani mi the shliach, the bar mitzvah. Because at least a shliach is subject to mitzvahs. This Gemara is one of the places in Shas where you have the word bar mitzvah. The expression bar mitzvah comes from this Gemara and other similar ones like it. So therefore, the shliach is subject to the regular mitzvahs like any other yid. I will eved delav bar mitzvah, but the eved is not subject to mitzvahs. And Rashi points out the whole concept of shlichus we learn in the Gemara. We had it earlier in the fifth parak. We learn from the word where it says in the pasuk by Truma, gam atem, and we learn from that your shliach has to be like atem, just like you are chayev in mitzvah, so is your shliach. Well, then, in that case, the concept of shoyl is not the, and the concept of shoyl and mashil, it doesn't apply to him. Rashi explains the concept of shoyl doesn't apply to him because he's not chayev in all mitzvahs, and mashil wouldn't apply because he doesn't own anything of his own. Mashil kona eved kona rab. There is actually Rishonim actually discussed what does Rashi mean by that. First of all, why wouldn't he be chayev in she'ela, and eved is chayev in all the mitzvahs that women are chayev in? And who cares? The fact that he doesn't have any nechosim of his own, it doesn't matter. That maybe we would still say that he has the ability to do it. So then Ramban explains, in other words, that it means at least though. Fine, we don't mean specifically the dinim of shoyl and mashal like Rashi is saying, but in general, we would say that the shliach has to have the same degree of chiyuv and mitzvah. So he has to be bar mitzvah just as much as the mashalayach, and an eved is not, because an eved is not chayev in all mitzvahs. So on the one hand, you could say that, or even if we say, like Rabbi Yoshia, that we don't say shluch hashem kamosai in such cases. On the other hand, hanimi the shliach, that applies to a shliach who is a separate entity. Avol eved yad eved kiyad rabbi damya. But when it comes to an eved, after all, he has no independence of his own. His hand is considered like his master's hand. So maybe therefore it would work. So that was Rav Ilish's question. Amalei, so Rava answers, mistabra yad eved kiyad rabbi damya. It's logical to say that the hand of the eved is like the hand of his master, and therefore that yes, it would work. And therefore we would say that with an eved, we would say that it's considered she'elim abayim if he sends his eved to go along with the cow or beforehand. That we would say yad eved ki yad rabbe, and therefore ba'ol of imay would apply. As far as a shliach, though, most of the rishonim understand that no, with a shliach we said that not. There are rishonim who learn that the answer is that the eved is just like a shliach, and therefore by a shliach it would in fact work as well. Okay, another question. Boy, Rami Bachama. Let's go back to the case of a husband and wife as far as nichsim alone. So Rami Bachama asked, "Baal benichse ishtay shoyel havi oisoichem." In general, when a husband uses property of his wife's, is he considered a shoyel or a soicher? It sounds like he's asking, in other words, is he chayev in oinsin of it? If an oinus would have happened to the animal, would he be chayev like a shoyel, or would he be potter like a soicher? So he's using an animal of nichsim malug that belongs to his wife.
Nichsim malug.
No, we're not talking about nichsim tzayin barzel. The husband definitely has full ownership of, and he just has to reimburse her at the end.
Okay.
Nichsim malug, though, she owns all the time. So Rami Bachama is asking, is he considered a soicher or shoyel? Amar Rava, l'chum chorfa shabeshta. So Rava says that based on his sharpness is his mistake. In other words, Rami Bachama is such a sharp Talmid Chacham that he asked a question, but this question is based on a mistaken premise. What's the question? Manafshach, either way you look at it, he'd be potter. If he's considered a shoyel, then it's still she'elah b'baylim, because she's always doing work for him, and she's already lent out to him, in effect, to do his work from when he married her, because she's chayev, she now becomes chayev in various things to him and he to her. So therefore, so it would be she'elah b'baylim. And if he's considered a soicher, it would be schirus b'baylim. So one way or the other, he's potter from oinsin. So why even bother asking the question? Rather, the question that Rami Bachama is asking is, let's say she wasn't married to him before all of this started. Suppose that a man borrowed a cow from a woman, and then he married her. Now, since we established before that you have to have the bailam, have to be there, have to be working for him, the shas she'ela, you don't have it. In fact, Tosfa says that we could be talking about where he borrowed it from her. It's more often than he would rent it, but yes, the same din would apply if he borrowed it. So now the question would be, now when he married her, shoyel havi or soicher havi. Now the question would be, in general, is the husband considered a shoyel or a soicher? Namely, shoyel havi, do we say that he becomes a shoyel? V'asya she'ela b'baylim mafka schiros shaloi b'baylim. So what we have now is, in other words, when he now marries her, in effect, we say now he becomes now you have a new thing. So it started with he rented the animal. He rented the animal. Now he marries her, and now maybe therefore he's considered a borrower. So the borrowing undoes the previous rental. Previously, it was a renter and rentee relationship, and now it's being transformed into a borrowing relationship. Well, va'asya she'ela b'baylim mafka schirus. So the she'ela b'baylim, which now begins at the time of the marriage, that takes away the schirus shaloi b'baylim, the previous schirus that was there but without b'baylim. So therefore, we would say that now we would have the rule of she'ela b'baylim, and if something happens to the animal that he's bought her, oidilma soicher havi, or maybe when he marries her, he's still just considered a soicher. In general, in other words, maybe we say that in general, the husband in the nichsim malug is considered like a soicher, because in effect, he's getting the use of it in return for that he's chayev different obligations for her. Just like a soicher who has to pay a fee for what he's borrowing. So therefore, or schiros kedekaima kaima. So he started out by borrowing the animal, and he started out by renting the animal, and now it continues as a rental. So therefore, there's no schiros babaylim because there's no ba'al of imay, because when he first rented it, she wasn't married to him yet. She wasn't imay, and now that she got married to him, that doesn't matter. She wasn't there b'shas schiros. So that's the question. So the Gemara asks still, why is that a question? So what's the difference? Why are we saying, so you're saying if he was a shoyl, you're saying that the fact that he's a shoyl now would override the schirus before that was without bailim. You could say also, he's soicher nami havi, even if you say that he's a soicher. Why should we say that it's a continuation of the previous schirus? Tesis schirus b'bailim, tipuk schirus shalai b'bailim. Why don't you say also that you start a new term of schirus, this one being b'bailim? So what you're assuming for purposes of the question that if he's considered a shoyl in general, then the she'ela overrides the schirus. But if in general he's considered a soicher, then it doesn't. Why? Either way, why don't we say a new term of she'ela or a new term of schirus begins when he marries her? So Tosfos says it's not really a svara to say that only if you say he's a shoyo where he's chayiv and onsin would undo the previous schirus, because Tosfos doesn't say why, but apparently because either way it's babaylim, you're not actually adding any chiyuv anyway. So that doesn't work. It's true that if he were to borrow or rent a cow from her beforehand, and then he gets married to her, there's no question that his new she'ela or schiros, however you count it, undoes the previous one, and therefore now it's she'ela b'bayim. El, he come boil Rami Bachama. Rather, Rami Bachama's question would be a different case. She borrowed a cow from somebody else, and now the husband married. So now the nichsim alug, the terms of the nichsim alug is that now during that time of schiros, the husband is also entitled to use it, because again, any nichsim alug, then you have he owns the payrus, and therefore he's just like any other nichsim alug that she brings in, he's entitled to the payrus, so it would be over here. Now, Rabbi Akiva Eger and Gilyon Ashas actually wonders why should that be so. The fact is, the Keren doesn't belong to her. The Keren belongs to somebody else. She herself is only entitled to the Paris. So why indeed should he be entitled to the Paris? Mela, when you have something where she owns the Keren, then he gets the Paris. But if she to begin with, doesn't have the Keren because she only rented it, why should he be? So Rabbi Akiva Eger leaves it as Tzorich Iyun Gadol. That it requires great investigation to understand what the Gemara is saying.
There is.
The Achronim talk about that. At least that you can talk about where there's no Keren at all. Here, at least there is a Keren. It doesn't belong to the wife. It belongs to the one who rented it to her. But nevertheless, he owns the Keren, and therefore that's still a valid reason to say that maybe the husband will be entitled to payments. Because there does exist a Keren. So anyway, so the point is like this. Now, we learned all the way back in Perek HaMafkid, we had a case. Okay. In Perek HaMafkid, we had a case like this. We had a case, a person rented a cow from somebody else, and then he lent it out to somebody else. We learned in the Gemara over there, usually a person has the right to say, Ein Ritzoni Sheyet Ritzoni Biyad Acher, so he gave him permission. Whatever the case, the point is that now when the animal died, so we said we had a machlokas in the Mishnah, what happened? The shoyl, after all, is chayiv for the animal dying. The soicher is potter, because it's an onus. So therefore, so Tanakama and the Mishnah had said over there.
He rented it, then he lent it.
No. Reuven owns a cow. Yeah. Shimon rented it from him.
Right.
Shimon then lent that cow out to Levi. Right. And as we said in the Gemara over there, he did it with the owner's permission.
Right.
So now, if the animal dies while Levi is, while if the animal dies while it's in Levi's reshus, then the Tanakama had said that Shimon, the soicher, has to swear that this is happening, that this is what happened. He's a soicher, so he's potter from onsin. Now Levi, who was the shoyl, is going to pay him, and therefore Shimon ends up with the value of the cow. Therefore, now
Shimon makes money on
it. Yes, Rabbi Yossi had argued on that and said, how could he be doing business with somebody else's cow? He said, Ela taxa pot al bailim, the value of the cow goes back to the original owner. The fact that Shimon took a shvua to be potter doesn't mean that the money should stay by him. Now, that's going to bear on our Gemara over here. So again, we're talking about the wife over here rented a cow from somebody else, and now her husband married. Now, if we follow the Chachamim in that Mishnah in previously in Hamafkid, where we said that the Shoyal pays the Socher, then there's no question there's no question that in this case, the Socher is considered the owner. So therefore, in our case over here, the wife who is the Socher, so she was together with her husband by when he borrowed it, so therefore it would be considered she'elah b'baylim. So according to the Chachamim, there's no question the husband would be potter if something happens to the animal. The question we according to Rabbi Yosi, who in fact the halacha is like that, where he says that the value of the cow goes back to the original owner, meaning that the original owner is considered the one who lent it out in the first place. So in that case, the husband's not working for him. The husband and the wife are working for each other. So there's no shalem bialim. My shoyal habi. So do we say that the husband is considered a shoyal on this animal? Therefore, he's going to be chayev to pay if something goes wrong. Or is socher habi? Or would we say that he's a socher, and therefore that we would consider that he has. And since he's a socher, then we would say that therefore he would be, so therefore as a socher in general, you don't even need, but all of him, as a socher is potter from oinsin. So the question is not really specifically as far as she'elah b'baylim. The question would rather be, according to the Chachamim, we would say it's she'elah b'baylim. According to Rabbi Yossi, the question is b'chlal, whether he'd be a shoyal or a socher. So that would be Rami Bahama's question. So Omar Rava, so Rava answers, the answer is neither of the above. You're asking whether he's a shoyal or a socher. Baal, lo shoyal havi, but lo socher havi, ela lekeach havi. Actually, he's not considered either a borrower or a renter of his wife's nichsa malog. He's considered like a buyer. When he marries her, it's considered that he bought all of her nechos. Mid Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, based on what Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina says, the Amr Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, but Usha Hiskinu. In Usha, at one point in Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara tells us the Sanhedrin went into Golos in different places, and twice they were in the city of Usha in the north of Eretz Yisrael. So at one of those times that they were in Usha, Hiskinu, they made a takana, if the wife sold some of the Nichsim Malug while her husband was alive, Ubmesa, and then she died, Habal Motzim Yadala Kuchas. Right. The husband has the right to take it away from the purchasers because he's considered the lekeach rishon. He only owned payrus of them. She sold the goof, but nevertheless, she doesn't have the right to sell it without her husband's rishus. So therefore, the Chachamim gave him a stronger shibud and says that he's entitled to take it back. So the answer is he's considered a lekeach, and therefore, in terms of what happens over here, if there's an onus, then it's irrelevant to talk about whether he's a shoyal or a socher. He's considered a buyer, and therefore, like any other buyer, he bought it, and that's that. So therefore, he's going to have that degree of responsibility. Tosfos says though Tosfos learns he would be considered a shomechinam, which means that if he's pesheya, then at least he would be chayev for that. The Rambam actually disagrees with that as well, and says he wouldn't even be chayev for that. He would be potter even from Shia, because it's considered completely his for that purpose. And therefore, even if it's pesheya, he'd be potter. Okay. Now, since we're talking about a husband inheriting from his wife, or not inheriting from, but taking possession of his wife's nechassim of nichsim alog when he first marries her, so Rami Bachama has a question related to that. Baal b'nichsa ishto. We are talking about when he yaushens when. We're not talking about when he yaushens. We're talking about when he first marries her.
Yeah.
Baal b'nichsa ishto. When he first marries her and has now ownership as far as the payrus of his wife's nechassim, if there were property of hekdesh together with it. So Rashi gives an example. She inherited property from her father after she got married, and among it was money of hekdesh. Nobody knew that it was money of hekdesh. So now the husband is zoche in all the nechassim. So does that mean, therefore, that now, so meanwhile, who's the one who committed me'ila at this point? Do we say that now, So the question would be, Tosfos teaches out the question, would we say that he's committed me'ila, that he did the ma'isa by marrying her, and in that he's zoicha with this money, or maybe we would say she did the main maisa that she married him, or maybe the Beis Din or the one, maybe the Beis Din are the ones. So that's Omar Rava, man lima. So Rava says, actually, of the three parties involved, who are you going to think committed me'ila over here? Lima baal, l'shayach lima baal, should you say that the husband is the one who committed me'ila? Can't. The husband would never want in the first place to be koina something which is also to him. To begin with, we would understand that he only means to be koina what's mutter. So therefore, you can't hold him responsible for me'ila just because there's money of hekdish in there. Would you say that she's the one who committed me'ila by taking it out of the reshus of hekdish? So you can also say she wouldn't want to be koina herself. She wouldn't want to be koina anything that belonged to her father or other relative. That would be hekdish. So Tosfos actually says that the result would be, therefore, maybe even if she actually takes the money in her hand and gives it to her husband, maybe she still wouldn't be considered the me'ila because she didn't know that it belongs to Hekdesh. Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz actually asks the question, in that case, how does me'ila work at all? The whole point of me'ila is you didn't know that money belonged to Hekdesh and you accidentally spent it, or you didn't know this object belonged to Hekdesh and you accidentally used it or whatever. If we're saying over here, it depends on your das, then So Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, six of Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz actually wrote in Shittim HaGobert says, explains like this. At least when a person is in a normal case of me'ila, he does mean to spend the money. But here with a husband and wife, we're talking about they don't have any intention even of removing it from where it's from the reshus that it's in now. When you have money and you go and spend it, you know, I'm taking it out of my reshus and I'm putting it in your reshus. So therefore, so we can talk about if there's me'ila involved, where the money turned out to belong to Hekdesh. But here, there's no intention even to remove it from one reshus to another, because it's an automatic thing that when he marries her, then he acquires her nichsim alur. Therefore, the Gemara is wondering whether, therefore, Rava is arguing that it shouldn't matter then. He doesn't have any intention to acquire it. She doesn't have any intention to acquire it or to give it to him. Nimalu Beis Din, should we say the Beis Din of that generation maybe should be the one who are chayav in Me'ila? Meaning Rashi has an interesting expression over here. Shekol takonis mishpat loya behen. All the takonis of all judgments depend on them. Anytime we have a din d'rabbanan, they're the ones who are responsible for making sure that it actually happens. Therefore, we can say they're the ones, in effect, it's as if they're the ones who made the takonah in the first place. So are you going to say they're the ones who should be chayev for me'ila? Can't. Ki of the rabbanan takanta, when did the chachamim make the takonah? The omru baal lekeach, that they would say the husband is considered lekeach lahatera. They would only say it as far as that he's acquiring things that are heter. To begin with, the original chachamim back in Usha and their successors in every generation, you have, by the way, a concept the Gemara mentions elsewhere called sibur loy mes. That sibur never dies because you always have there's always new Jews to replace them, and therefore the sibur is considered almost like a corporate body. You'd say, for example, a corporation never dies unless it goes bankrupt or something. The same way the corporate Jewish people never die. So therefore, the Beis Din of each generation is the corporate officers. They're the CEOs and the various other corporate officers of the Jewish people. And therefore, we can say that each one of them is taking their koyach from the original Beis Din. Anyway, the point is, but to begin with, when they made the takana, would be only lehetera. They never made the takana that it should apply to anything of Isser. So therefore, so what's the question? Therefore, there's nobody to commit me'ila. Ella Omar Rava, rather Rava says, you're right. When he first gets the money in his reshus as nichsam alug, there's no me'ila being committed. But baal mo'al l'chshayotzi. But when the husband spends the money, then at that point he will be committing me'ila. Midi dehavi amotz mois hekdesh l'cholin, because that's the same kind of thing as any time that a person spends money of hekdesh on a holden purpose, where again, as Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz said, it's true, he doesn't know that it was hekdesh, he wouldn't have known, but at least he has the intention to take it from one reshus to another, and therefore, when he's doing that, when he's spending the money on something, he knows that he's taking it from one reshus to another, and therefore, if it turns out that it was hekdesh, then at that point, he will have committed me'ila. But other than that, again, we said before, he's considered a lekeach in the wife's property, so he's not lekeach, he's not acquiring to begin with something which is also, but nevertheless, when he spends it, then the fact is he is taking it out of the reshus of hekdesh and putting it in and spending it, and therefore at that point he becomes chayav from eila.